When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Jovan, boo-ha! Boo-ha!
Yo, yo, I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, I'm going to be doing part one of a two-part mailbag. All these questions were submitted on YouTube. I will do my best to answer as many of them as possible. Without further ado, let's get into the mailbag. First question from Glotty. From the moves that we have done this offseason, what would you say is the Lakers' identity going into the season, both offensively and defensively? This is a fun one. From a macro perspective, looking at the Lakers' statistical profile, I think the blueprint for this team will be to be a top five offense and around league average defensively, ideally slightly above league average. So if the Lakers can be, say, the third ranked offense and the 13th ranked defense, that's going to be a really good basketball team that challenges for mid 50s wins in the regular season and has a chance to make a deep playoff run. Ideally, you are top 10 on both sides of the ball. I don't think this group as currently constructed is quite good enough defensively to be top 10 on that side of the ball. I think there are some clear holes and limitations within the rotation, but if they can be around league average, which would be a big step up from last season, the Lakers were a bottom five defense for most of last season. It took that March surge to get them to finish 20th in defense. Even then, they were barely outside of the bottom 10. So they were a bottom 10, if not bottom five defense for a huge chunk of last season. And I think they will be better than that. You'll see some more stability with this group. But if they can be a top 3 to 5 offense and somewhere between like 12th and 16th defensively, That to me is the recipe for this team having a lot of success. Now, if we want to break this down in a granular sense, in terms of identity, I think this is going to be a Luka Doncic-led offense. So that means a ton of pick and roll with Luka and Walker Kessler as the foundation of that, but also Luka and Mamu, Luka and Adu, I think, in some bench looks. But anytime Luka's on the floor, you know there's going to be a steady dose of pick and roll play, and he's going to be in his bag early in games. He's going to set the tone with his 12, 15, 18 points, and then he's going to dissect the defense as they counter and adjust to him. I think Austin is going to play a big role in this. I think we'll see it similar to the Lakers' 10-4 start last year, and anytime they didn't have LeBron, where you had Luka and Austin attacking out of the pick and roll. They were both top 10 pick and roll practitioners last season in terms of points per possession. So the Lakers are going to be a lethal offense. They're going to, I think just having Austin and Luka out there together gives you a 120 plus offensive rating, which gives you a top five offense. Can they sustain that in the minutes it's just one of the two? Can they sustain that potentially in minutes where it's neither of the two? That remains to be seen. But with those two on the floor as your foundation, you're walking into a top five offense. That's been the case over the last two seasons. The rest of the rotation, Grimes, Zaire, Jake, Matisse, Adu, Cameron Carr, Vando, all these guys are going to be the ancillary pieces that are spotting up in the dunker spot, cutting, continually moving, relocating. And that's going to be LA's offensive identity. I think with the additions of Grimes and Mamu and Sexton, you will see a higher level of decision-making and the dribble shoot pass elements that JJ has talked about in the past in terms of what he wants from role players. I think you'll see that to a higher degree. If you look at the incoming players versus the outgoing players, the incoming players, despite not shooting as well as Luke or Rui from a percentage standpoint, are actually higher volume three-point shooters than the guys that the Lakers lost. And on top of that, they actually are more efficient in terms of attacking closeouts, looking at points per possession. So we're specifically looking at the role players here. Obviously, there's a giant aside with the loss of LeBron and all that the Lakers are going to lose by losing him. Those are some areas where the Lakers have some guys who can get downhill in Grimes and Sexton, a guy in Mamu who's a stretch big, can give them a stretch five look or a double big look and fit next to Kessler or Looney. So I think there's a bit more versatility with the front court offensively. There's also some more dynamism, some more speed, some more downhill ability. Guys like Grimes and Sexton are better at getting into the paint, getting into the teeth of the defense compared to guys like Rui and Luke, etc. So I think the Lakers wanted more skill and versatility offensively, and they have that. If we're looking at an injury plague season, I still think they'll be top seven, but realistically, if they have normal health or even good health, I think this should be a top three offense this season. Now, defensively, it's TBD because I think the Lakers are asking, I've been making this point on Lakers Collective, they're asking guys at non-taxpayer mid-level exception and below level values to carry a certain burden defensively. And it's one thing when you have a Kayson Wallace on a rookie scale deal or guys like that, Stephon Castle, where it's guys that are clearly, you know, should be making 20 plus million, 30 plus million in some cases. And they're just on that because they're so early into their careers. Like the Lakers don't have those guys. That's not Matisse Thybulle or Zaire Williams or Adu. Adu could eventually pop and become that type of guy. Cameron Carr could pop and become that type of guy. But as of right now, the Lakers are asking minimum guys or barely above minimum guys to fill these important voids of starting on a team that wants to contend for a championship and playing like primary defensive roles on a team that wants to contend for a championship. And so in terms of the defense, there will be a significant boost going from DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes to Walker Kessler. That alone is going to dramatically shift the Lakers' rim protection and defensive rebounding and just overall interior defense. I think it's going to be in a better spot. The perimeter defense, I think there is now this influx of defensive playmaking with guys like Thybulle and Zaire. If Adu and Carr are part of the rotation, I think there will be some defensive playmaking there with the deflections and steals and blocks. So I think the Lakers have this ability to create some chaos with their current perimeter guys. I think the question will be, can those guys perform at a certain level offensively? And the only reason I bring that up is because JJ has shown he likes offense. He likes shooting. If you can't perform offensively, your role will be limited. So I do think those guys need to be able to make open shots, make plays, at least from a finishing perspective. They need to do the basics to stay on the floor for JJ. If they could do that, that will allow them to play a role and potentially play a bigger role than anticipated. And so I think the Lakers will be a heavier drop team and really try to focus on that point of attack defense with guys like Grimes and Thybul and Sexton and see if they can funnel guys into Kessler. I think that's a real option now. It's different funneling a player into Kessler versus funneling a guy into Ayton or Hayes. So that will be a real weapon for them. And then on top of that, I think they can create some more chaos and have the defensive playmaking. Now, I think if you look at the group, it is more of like a help defense, defensive playmaking chaos group than it is a point of attack, wing stopping, I'm going to stop you. Like even Thybul has slipped a bit as a point of attack / wing stopper. He is more of a playing the passing lanes, playing the driving lanes, helping type guy. So that's my primary concern here with this defensive group is that overall it's a bunch of minimum level guys or in the case of Grimes, non-taxpayer MLE, but like guys in that general range of 3 to 15 million. They're going to need a couple of those guys to outperform those contracts to like a significant degree. And if they do, then the Lakers, I think, will be in the mix in terms of title contention. If those guys play up to their typical levels or they play up to their contracts, that's solid. That could be good value, but I don't know if the Lakers will have enough in terms of their defense. Like really the X factors will be Adu and Carr. And if either one of those guys can pop, I think if Adu can really become a fixture in the rotation, his athleticism, his defensive playmaking could be a huge boost for the Lakers. Cameron Carr, I think it's more so going to be the offensive end, but he could also do some defensive playmaking as well. So I think there's a lot of TBD, a lot of unknown variables, unproven variables with the Lakers defense, especially in a winning context. Like all these guys for the most part project as bench players right now, not really starters on a team that wants to win a championship. But just because you project one way doesn't mean you are one way. So that's the distinction I want to make here is a guy like Grimes looks more like a sixth or seventh man, but maybe he pops and is a true starter. Adu and Carr probably project right now more as fringe rotation guys. Maybe they're ready for a bigger role. Zaire, Matisse, those are minimum guys, at least based on the market. But hey, maybe they outperform that and perform like $5 or $6 million players or even $8 or $10 million players, right? So there is a range of outcomes here that I want to acknowledge that there is upside, there is untapped potential within this rotation. I just also want to be honest and have a real dialogue about it of you rarely are going to win a championship or contend for a championship when your roster is built around, well, our best defenders are minimum guys or guys who aren't at a certain level. That's where I think the Lakers still have this hole as, in the starting group and overall just sliding everybody down. Like, we talk about, is it Jake? Is it Adu? Is it Zaire? Is it Matisse in terms of who's going to start? I think the real answer is it probably should be someone else that's not on the roster. And then, maybe Adu pops and he's eventually the long-term starter, or maybe someone else emerges off the bench and grows into that role. But as of right now, I think the real answer to who should be the fifth starter is someone not on the team. We'll see if the Lakers can end up acquiring that player either now or ahead of the trade deadline. But overall, I am bullish on the Lakers. I think looking at the offensive side, there is a clarity there. And I made this point before, but last season, I feel like they just looked better when it was only two of the three of the big three. But in particular, the best combination overall and offensively was Luka and Austin. So I think there is something there in terms of their success over the past year and a half, and they will lead a top offense. Defensively, there are some questions. They are very dependent on Walker Kessler staying healthy. If he misses 15, 20, 25 games, I think the defense will be in real trouble during those stretches with the next guys up being Mamu and Kevon Looney, who range from average to below average defensively, particularly as rim protectors. Then looking at the rest of the group, like it's just, can those guys step up? Can they cobble together this wing by committee and get by defensively? So right now I would project the Lakers as an offense first team with the defensive upside to be around average-ish. And that more so coming from the rim protection with Kessler and the defensive playmaking and chaos with some of their wings. But we'll see. Certainly, there's some real upside here in terms of some of the pieces. There's also some downside. Maybe some guys aren't ready for the spotlight aren't ready for bigger roles in the rotation or just play up to their contracts. And it's like, hey, Matisse Thybulle, Zaire Williams, good values for a minimum, but they're still minimum or barely above minimum level guys, at which point that's just not good enough for what the Lakers need.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in 4 fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Next question from Kingway TV. What's up, Jovan? I just wanted to let you know you and Trevor Lane are the two best people covering the Lakers. And my question is, do you think this Lakers squad will win at least 50 games? I appreciate that. Thank you so much. That means a ton to hear. And yes, I do expect this Lakers team to win more than 50 games. They've won 50 plus games in back-to-back seasons. I do not see that changing this season. This will, of course, come down to how healthy the team is, right? If they have a year from hell from a health perspective, they certainly could underachieve and not hit the 50 win threshold. But assuming relatively normal health, I think this is a group that will win 50 plus games. Right now, I'm probably in a range of like 52 to 54 wins, which would put them similar to last season. I think one interesting thing for me is the floor with this team to me is undeniably higher than the floor with last year's group. Remember, last year's group had plenty of games where they simply got their ass kicked. They got blown out 15, 20, 25 points. And there were just some nights you could see within the first 6 minutes of the game, the Lakers didn't have it. And they were down 20-8 a few minutes into the game. And it's just like, all right, game over. They had a few comebacks, but for the most part, it was okay. This is it. They're just getting blown out tonight. And so this year's group, I think, will be just because they're younger, they're deeper, they're more athletic, they're more dynamic. I think this year's group will have a higher floor. They will be more stable night to night. You'll see less variance with their performance. And so I think they might win like a similar amount of games, but it will be a more consistent product. And I think, remember with last year's group as well, they had the statistical benchmarks of a team that was closer to 500 or just above 500, and they really punched above their weight with a bunch of close wins. And I think this team will still be good in the clutch because they have Luka and because they have Austin. And this has just been a hallmark of this group over the last couple of years. You know, JJ also in the clutch with his adjustments and whatnot. But I don't think there will be as many close wins or as much close, as much clutch success, because that's difficult to replicate year over year. Denver is an example of a team that has had that over a sustained stretch. So maybe the Lakers can continue that. And they have tended to punch above their expected wins. But I think this year's group will just be more stable and have maybe not as high of highs as last year's group, but certainly not as low of lows. And they will not have, there was an extended stretch there of almost 3 months where the Lakers were a 500 team. I think middle, December through February, they were like 19 and 20. That I don't think will happen this season, of like that long of a stretch where the team is just mediocre or even bad. And so I think this year's group, we'll see on the ceiling. Certainly some things have to hit for the Lakers to actualize their potential, actualize their ceiling. But I would say that for me right now, I would pencil this group in as a top four team in the West, as a team that's going to win 50 plus games. Next one from Jay Kennett Official. How do you think we'll fare this season, assuming we're done with our moves versus if we get Kuminga? Also, what's your favorite sitcom? This is an interesting one because my outlook on the Lakers isn't dramatically different with or without Jonathan Kuminga. What I like about Kuminga is clearly there's upside and potential, and we've seen the flashes of who he can be, and it's just now a matter of can he be that player consistently, and also can he buy into a winning culture? Can he buy into doing the little things? And I made the comparison to him being an Aaron Gordon or Andrew Wiggins type in terms of this former lottery pick who might have had ambitions of being an all-star, ambitions of being a go-to player, but eventually had a sobering, humbling experience a few years into the league where it was like, hey, you do have these physical tools, you do have this skill, this talent, these gifts, but you're not quite at that number one or number two level. But what you can be is a true number three or number four. And I think if you look at what Aaron Gordon was able to do in Denver as the number three there, or what Andrew Wiggins did for the Warriors as the number three there, they both won championships as the third best player. And of course, there were nights where maybe they were the second best player, or maybe they were the fourth or fifth best player. But on balance, they were roughly the third guy on those two teams, respectively. And that, to me, is Kuminga's potential. Now, will he ever actualize that? Will he ever buy into that? Will he embrace that? I don't have the answer to that. But that is where the upside with Kuminga is so appealing. So I guess, like, for me, if I average out the potential outcomes, that's where it doesn't make a huge difference for me, because there are some outcomes where he is amazing and helps the Lakers win 60 games and really compete with OKC or San Antonio. And there's some outcomes where things go south and he isn't happy with his role, or it's just not really clicking from a basketball perspective, a basketball fit, and he just looks like the odd man out, and the Lakers eventually have to try and trade him either at the deadline or next summer, or even, you know, the following seasons. In general, the Lakers adding Kuminga might only affect the Lakers win total by a couple games. And I know that doesn't sound like much, but when you actually look at like estimated wins added and how much it takes for a player to influence wins, typically, like, you know, a player adding two or three wins to your total is a notable number. And you'll typically see stars really drive that with, you know, 10, 15, 20 wins, whatever. But I think a guy like Kuminga could help the Lakers win 2 to 4 more games. But the real boost to me would be the Lakers having a clearer hierarchy within the roster, with the starting group, with the closing group, and also having a better construction to match up with OKC, San Antonio, New York, and the other top teams. Because right now, I think the Lakers would be asking someone who is currently not equipped or currently not ready for the role that they'd be in. And so whether that's Jake, Zaire, Matisse, Adu, Cameron Carr, whoever's that potential fifth starter, Mamu, there is some, I think, significant flaw with each of those guys, right? Like Mamu, it's the collective foot speed and defense with that front court. With Carr and Adu, they're just unproven. They're young. I think the Lakers need to bring them along, but bring them along at a relatively modest pace and let them find their footing. And if they pop and if they are ready for that role, okay, that's a different story. But I don't know if you can just assume that or put them in that position immediately, especially if you have championship aspirations. And then Jake, Zaire, and Matisse, I think just all project as bench guys on a good team, but not starters on a good team. So the Lakers have that clear hole that I think Kuminga can fill. He is a starting level wing / forward in the NBA. Now, is he a starting level wing / forward on a championship team or on a contender? That remains to be seen. But I think he at least checks that box and has the upside to grow into the role that the Lakers need from him. Now, there's also a lot of downsides, which is why this is risky, and which is why I think the Lakers are hesitant to go all in and empty the clip in terms of assets to go get a guy like Kuminga versus maybe trying to do that for a different type of player. Like, there's just some uncertainty here that you don't have to deal with other guys. But in terms of overall outcome, I still view the Lakers in the same general range. Like, right now, I think you could probably debate 3 through 5 in the West between the Lakers, Nuggets, and Wolves. I would have the Lakers 3rd or 4th in that mix. I think if they get Kuminga, I would clearly have them 3rd. And then in terms of potential outcomes, I think this group could lose in round one. I would not pick them to lose in round one, but I think it's theoretically possible, but would more likely lose in round two. With Kuminga, I would have more confidence in them winning in round one. And then again, likely losing in round two, but probably having a more competitive showing in round two. I don't think Kuminga is the piece that puts them over the top or on par with OKC or San Antonio. So either way, whether they have Kuminga, whether they have the current group, or even if they had PJ Washington, I still think OKC and San Antonio project to be better teams with more starting level players, more versatility and depth in terms of their primary rotation, and just a better possible 5-man group that they could throw out compared to what the Lakers can throw out. And so I don't know if there's anything they can do to close the gap with those two particular teams, but I think Kuminga does get them closer to those teams, does put them in a more competitive spot. And then at that point, I think there may be a piece or two away. And in terms of my favorite sitcom, two immediately come to mind: The Office and Arrested Development. I was late to The Office party. I didn't watch The Office until, I want to say, 2020 or 2021. I think it was 2020 during the pandemic. I knew its significance in terms of the characters and memes and GIFs and the constant references to it, but I just was not really interested in it. I've actually, one thing about me is, like, I'm more of a dark humor guy, and I also love R-rated comedies, and so I like it a little raunchier. I like some cursing, I like some sophomoric humor sometimes. So for me, sometimes sitcoms just don't bring enough of that, and it's like a PG version of that, or even a PG-13. And so that's why I didn't really give The Office a chance. But once I did, I realized what I had been missing out on, and it was exactly what the hype said it was. If anything, it exceeded my expectations. So love The Office. Arrested Development to me is like the building on the inside jokes. I've never seen a show build on inside jokes. I know there's other shows, Parks and Rec and you know, different ones, whatever. But for me, Arrested Development is like a show where season 2, season 3, they will hit you with a random callback to something they haven't talked about in over a season. But it's like, if you've watched it, if you've paid attention to it, you will get the reference. And those are some of the deepest laughs I've ever had in my life, is watching Arrested Development and the way that the jokes and the storylines build on top of one another. I just think it's incredible writing, incredible callback humor. A show like The Office, you could throw on a random episode and anyone can find it funny. Arrested Development has elements of that, but I do think it's something you have to watch in chronological order and really understand the characters and the jokes. And once you get it, then they will just throw in random things that are the funniest potential scenarios for each character, each storyline, whatever. But far more of a comedy movie person, and particularly the heyday of late 90s through late aughts.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Next one from Chad Cade. First time for me posting in the chat. Appreciate the pod and all the great work you do covering the Lake Show. Do you get the sense that Pelinka is still too scared to fully commit and go all in? What is the point of trading Ayton for assets if you won't use them? Feels like they made a big move for Kessler, but don't have the guts to go all in for a starting forward like Kuminga. Signing 20 bench players doesn't add up to a starter. First and foremost, thank you for writing in for the first time, and thank you for supporting the show. This is a good question. This is a fair question. I don't think Pelinka is scared to fully commit. As I've talked about on here and on Lakers Collective, I think there's a ton of moving parts with the Kuminga situation. If the Lakers are sign-in trading for him, which is the only way they could acquire him now, they are committing to at least a three-year deal, if not potentially a four-year deal. And that's a long-term commitment with Kuminga. So I think a big thing for the Lakers is, what does that contract look like? What is that AAV? And if it's at a certain number that they're comfortable with, okay, proceed. If it is 15 plus million or even upwards of 20 million, do they want to commit to that? I don't think so. I think that would be too rich of a price for them. So I think it really comes down to, what are the assets that they have to send out? I don't think it's as simple as just going all in or not for Kuminga. Where I will criticize this is the potential not going all in for a guy like PJ Washington. I would do that in a heartbeat. And that to me would be a more all in move that I would criticize them for not doing or not viewing it as the right final piece. I just disagree with that. We talked about it on Lakers Collective the other day with Pete. Like, that to me is a no-brainer if you can land a PJ Washington. My understanding with the Ayton situation is it's not just that they traded him to replenish the cupboard. I mean, they needed to save some money and they got some assets back. So I think those were the two driving forces of that move. Remember, they needed to save some money to get under the cap to execute several of their moves. However, it wasn't just that. There was also an element of Ayton and Luka share an agent, and they wanted to put Ayton in a position where he could continue to play and rehab his value. And he's not gonna be playing a ton, he's not gonna be starting, but maybe AD gets traded, maybe AD gets injured, and now all of a sudden Ayton is in a more prominent role. And so I think there's multiple wrinkles with the Kuminga situation, there's multiple wrinkles with the Ayton trade. But to your point, I understand that. Like, this would be my biggest gripe overall with the Lakers offseason, is I think they prioritized bench level players and multiple bench level players and depth at the expense of a starter. And right now they might only have three starting level players on the roster. You could argue four potentially with Grimes, but if we're talking guys who would get consideration to start on the Thunder or the Spurs or the Knicks or pick your other favorite team, I think the Lakers only have three guys that would get any consideration on any of those other teams, and that's Luka, Austin, and Kessler. Grimes would be a sixth man or bench player on almost all those teams, and everyone else would be even lower in the pecking order. Some of their rotation guys wouldn't even be in the rotation on some of those teams. So that, to me, is still the concern here. And so I think that's the final thing that the Lakers have to address either this summer or next season or at the latest next summer, is adding, I think, a guy who's like a 20 plus million starting level wing / forward. It could be a big guard / small wing. It could be just a normal size wing. It could be a big wing / forward, some variation of one of those three general archetypes. But it's got to be someone like 6'5 and above who is a 20 plus million dollar player because of their defense, because of their athleticism, because of their overall talent. And they need to be able to start and close games and play like 30 plus minutes. So it's a lot of boxes that need to be checked. But right now, none of the current guys check it. I think they are trying to do this by committee, to your point. Like, look, I've been plenty critical of the front office in general. I've been critical of them at times this offseason, looking at the Sexton move, for example, compared to potentially keeping Marcus or signing Oubre. And that was in line with like looking for that stopgap on the wing. But I will say, like, the Kuminga situation is not binary. There are a lot of contingencies within that situation. And then the Ayton situation, they needed to find a way to save money. They got some assets back, and I think they did him a favor. So that's my read on those two situations. But certainly the Lakers need at least one more starter, if not a couple more. Speaking of that, this next one from Mr. Messenger. I feel like we are a starting 3-4 and backup center away. What would be your plan to get those pieces by the start of the 2027 season? With an asterisk, you can make trades based off what you think fair market value is, and free agency based on who you think will be there. A lot to unpack with this one. I think this is maybe a little bit of a pessimistic view of the Lakers offseason, but you could also argue a realistic view. This speaks to an earlier point I made in terms of the Lakers only having three locked in starting level players. Everyone else is arguably a bench player or needs to show a level of progress and development that they haven't shown necessarily up to this point. One caveat I would add to this, and I think this is an important distinction, is that I don't think it necessarily has to be a three and a four. I think it more so has to be a point of attack defender and a wing defender slash forward defender. So what I mean by that is the ideal slotting defensively, in my opinion, would be Kessler at the five. You have this like 6'7 to 6'9 wing slash forward who can defend threes and fours and put Luka as the secondary front court guy, as the helper, as the guy on non-threats in the front court. And then you have a guy in that 6'5 to 6'7 range who is the point of attack defender and can take on ones or twos, and then puts Austin in a secondary backcourt role where he's the guy on the non-threat or the secondary guy, and this guy's guarding the point guards. Now, I will note that Quentin Grimes, I think, has the upside to grow into being a clear starter and has the upside to grow into being the clear point of attack guy. I don't think that's what he's shown up to this point. I think he has produced and looked more like a bench guy, a really good bench guy, potentially a sixth man of the year type guy, but not quite a full-time starter. And going back to the 2022-23 season in New York, he did look like a legitimate point of attack, perimeter, ISO, lockdown defender. My pushback would be, that was 3 years ago, going on 4 years, going into this season. And I don't think it's a given that he just returns to being that guy in that specific role. I think if anything, he's actually flashed more on the offensive side. If you look at what he did in Dallas and Philly more recently, and he's looked like this guy who has some untapped potential on that end, which can be valuable and can be useful. But that to me, at least in the context of this team, makes more sense in a bench role than a starting role. But for now, I do believe he is going to start. The Lakers will put him in that POA role, and I think he can grow into that. So I'm sort of around like 3.5 starters, depending on how Grimes looks. But beyond that, I would agree that Laravia, Zaire Williams, Matisse, and for now, Adu and Carr all project as bench level players going into this upcoming season. So I would say they need at least one more starter, if not potentially two. And if they got two, I would really like the slotting of two new starters, plus Grimes as a sixth man, Mamu as a seventh man, Sexton as an eighth man. You could go Carr and Adu 9-10, and then have Looney or whoever as like the situational 11th man, ideally a better backup there, as you point out as well. That would be my ideal way to do all this. But in terms of finding those pieces, so I think the obvious one right now is finding that big wing slash forward. You could trade for Jonathan Kuminga, or you can trade for PJ Washington. We've already talked through variations of that. In terms of backup five, I think right now Jericho Sims might be my favorite in terms of a potential low cost trade candidate. And then that starting point of attack guy, right now I think it's probably going to be Grimes as a placeholder. So I would look more toward next summer. If you look at the center market, and I bring up the center market just because I'm more intrigued by like some of the backup five options, there's just not a lot out there. So I would say, I mean, potentially Jackson Hayes, depending on what Utah does with him and how they feel about his team option. Paul Reed is an interesting name that I don't know if the Lakers can necessarily afford him, but it depends on how they want to allocate their money. Then you got Andre Drummond returning to the unrestricted free agency market, and Sims will be an unrestricted free agent. Jay Huff, Indiana has a team option on him. And then it gets Adembona. The Sixers have an option on him. Oso Igudaro in Phoenix, they have a team option on him. I mean, several of these team options I do expect to be picked up, but just noting that those guys could potentially become free agents. And so it's slim pickings on the backup center market. Maybe the prices for some guys drop, but that's a difficult one where I would probably look either buying an early second round pick or continuing to evaluate G League level guys and seeing if someone pops or something like that. But just looking at next, like all these guys, you're not getting AD or Jokic or Kat or Gobert, and all these guys have player options. So might not even be free agents to begin with, could sign extensions or opt into their player options. I'm just noting the guys who are actually free agents. Goga Bitadze, DeAndre Ayton, like those are some of the other names we could throw out there. Yeah, Goga's interesting, but after the incident last year with Luka, I don't know that he'll be a Laker anytime soon. Like it's just an uninspiring list, to be quite frank. In terms of wings, this gets a bit more interesting. There are guys like Cameron Johnson, Kyle Kuzma, DeAndre Hunter, Dylan Brooks. I don't think they will be in the mix for Brooks, who's making $21.5 million now and could be due for a raise, but potentially Johnson, Kuzma, or Hunter for the non-taxpayer MLE. My strong preference would be Johnson among this group. And then honestly, I might even go Hunter over Kuzma. I think that's close. I would honestly want to stay away from either one of those guys and view those guys more as bench wings than starting level wings. Then you get into Zachary Richichet as a $17 billion team option. That we'll see if Dallas ends up picking that one up. Rui, there's a team option on him. Going down the list here, Vando has his player option, which he will opt into. Then we get to Derek Jones Jr., Najee Marshall, two guys I really like. So I think Derek Jones is a little small for that big wing slash forward role, but can play that POA role. So Derek Jones Jr. is someone I would be interested in. Najee, view more as a bench level guy, but would be interested in him as well. Keldon Johnson, Lu Dort, Max Strus. I like some of these names. Davion Mitchell is a name I really like. Dante DiVincenzo, depending on where he's at health-wise. Chris Dunn is another name I like. And so I think there are some options on the wing, some options on the perimeter for that starting point of attack role or the wing stopper slash big forward role. I will say that most of these options to me trend more point of attack, smaller position, and the Lakers might already have that filled with Quentin Grimes. So this to me is another reason why getting a PJ Washington, getting a Jonathan Kuminga does make some more sense, because I think that role might be a little bit more difficult to fill, right? And so just looking at this list, I feel like the Lakers should try to get that starting level four and then see if Quentin Grimes can develop. And of course, there's a scenario in which Cameron Carr or Du Thiro eventually develop into being those starting level guys. But that, you know, my plan right now would be try to find some value with the backup five. I don't think you necessarily need to invest a ton in the backup five. Ideally, you add the Kuminga or PJ Washington and still access that non-taxpayer next summer, which is where getting off Vando's contract would be very valuable. And then again, if you go into next season with two new starters, plus Grimes, Mamu, Sexton, Adu, and Carr as your primary bench group, I really like that and how all those pieces complement one another. So that would be my goal, would be to try to pull off one of the trades now, eventually get off Vando either now or next summer, and then still access the non-taxpayer MLE, add a couple of pieces that way, and then find a way either early second round or a minimum guy or you know someone ends up being available and you offer them the primary backup role in terms of the backup five. That would be how I go about that.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Next one from Pan_VL, a bit of a hot take, but I think a big part of Dalton's decline was actually because of JJ and the decreasing opportunities he got with the main team. I think that got him way out of rhythm and combined with all the other factors led to where we're at now. Do you think there's some truth to that? And if yes, does that say anything about our future young prospects? Yes, I agree with this assessment. I don't think that's the only reason why Dalton has not become a full-time rotation player. I don't think he has progressed enough defensively. And I also look at the shooting, and there was actually a shooting decline this past year. So it's early into his career, but he is 25 years old. So he's already, I mean, theoretically supposed to be a couple years away from his prime. If you look at the average NBA career, like, he is not a fully formed product yet, but he is getting up there. He's only played a couple years, but there's a reason why teams were a little bit lower on him, or there are multiple reasons why, but one of them was the age and just like, how is this guy going to develop in terms of just, you know, being as old as he was coming into the NBA. But I think there is something to JJ having a shorter leash with younger players, and particularly guys who make certain mistakes not being as forgiving or understanding with those mistakes. Now, again, I think Dalton has had some opportunities, and especially at the beginning of the season, didn't do the best job of capitalizing on those. And if you go back, like, yes, he got phased into a smaller role last season, especially after the trade, and became, remember, there was that shift where he was like, that stretch where he was just a one shift guy in the second quarter. He would start the second quarter, play like 4 or 5 minutes. They would see if he had his jumper going. If he didn't, that was it. Dalton was done for the evening. But that changed at the start of last season, especially with the injuries. You had Gabe injured and Marcus injured and Luka and Austin injured and LeBron was out. They had all these guys dealing with stuff, so that allowed Dalton to have some opportunities. And he had some nice performances, but I don't think it was undeniable. I don't think it was this situation where it was like, oh yeah, this is what we're missing in the rotation. Like, Dalton needs to play moving forward. I think when you have that opportunity, you need to make the absolute most of it and show the coaching staff it's a mistake not to play me. And I don't think at any point last season did it feel like it was a mistake not to play Dalton. So, but to the future of the young guys, this is a fair question, especially with the Lakers having so many perimeter guys now, where you could potentially play Zaire and Jake and Matisse and Vando at the expense of Cameron Carr and Adu Thiro. And I think that would be a mistake. I think looking at the bench and what the bench has, Cameron Carr has an offensive skill set that will allow him to play from day one. And I do expect him to be a rotation guy. The Lakers kept their first round pick. They traded up to get him. They invested in him. And I think they will try to develop him. And that will be a real emphasis for them. So, you know, similar to Dalton, remember Dalton's opportunity at the beginning of his rookie season. I think Cameron Carr will factor into the rotation here. And he also has better defensive playmaking and just defensive instincts and fundamentals than Dalton does. So I expect Carr to be in the rotation. Adu is the one where I wonder if that goes a bit sideways, especially because he is still relatively raw offensively, still needs a ton of work on his jumper, particularly from deep. That's the guy that I look at, is Zaire and Matisse and Vando, like, and Jake. You could throw Jake in there as well. Like, are those four guys going to take the minutes of Adu? Is Adu's development going to be stalled because of those guys? And I don't know the answer to that, but I would say I would really like to see Cameron Carr and Adu be in the primary rotation from day one, and then it'd be a bit of an open competition for that, guys to fill out the top 10, top 11. But if they're in there, like, I think there's a clear top 7 or 8 right now. If they can be in that top 10, 11, I think that will really benefit them this season, and the Lakers will be better off for it. The Lakers really need both of these guys to hit. They don't need them to necessarily hit as starters, but they need them to hit as at least good rotation level bench guys. And they can only do that with reps and with experience and with continuity and chemistry with their teammates. So I think that should be a focus and an emphasis for JJ. And I would say just a big difference is, like, Dalton is a shooter slash scorer who has not done so at an efficient enough or a high enough level and comes with some processing and defensive limitations. Carr and Adu project as rotation level NBA athletes, and they also have more to their game than just that. Like, Carr can do a lot of what Dalton could do, but he's also a bit more dynamic in terms of his three-level scoring. He's a better finisher at the rim. He's also a better defender in the defensive playmaking with the blocks and with the steals. And then Adu is just like a top 0.01% athlete in the NBA, and he's got his physical tools and gifts that the rebounding, the motor, the defense, etc. So I do expect both these guys to be ahead of Dalton in the rotation. I expect them to get more opportunity than Dalton has gotten over the past like year and a half, but you know, definitely post trades. It's a bit of a concern for me, but it's not a big concern. I will make that distinction. Like JJ has shown that he prefers guys who are ready now, guys that play JJ style basketball, guys who are mistake free, play in an analytical style. And I don't think that's always going to be Cameron Carr or Adu Thiro, but the Lakers have invested in those guys. The Lakers want those guys to develop and grow and be a part of their future. So I think it'll be a situation where they find some common ground there, and JJ is playing those guys and trying to develop them. And then final one from Joe Little 4201. In the context of pivoting from LeBron, do you think the Lakers or the Mavericks have a better potential future? This is an interesting one that I'm sure will not be polarizing at all, because I know there's a part of Luka FC that still overlaps with Mavericks FC, and you know, sometimes Mavericks fans will watch the content or whatnot. I will say that I believe the Lakers have the better potential future, and I'll say that for a couple of reasons. I mean, first and foremost, Luka Doncic, and I think Cooper Flagg is going to be a top 10, if not eventually top 5 player in the league. I think he will be a perennial first team All-NBA guy, a perennial MVP candidate. But we have the proof of concept with Luka in terms of the top 5 MVP finishes, leading a team to a finals, leading a team to a conference finals, and him consistently being at worst a top 5 player, if not a top 3 player over the last over the last half decade. And with him being at worst a top 5 player, if not a top 3 player over the last half decade or so. Flag, I guess longer term, if you're looking at the next 10 years, would you rather have Flag or Luka? Like with just the ages, Flag will be a better asset in like the late 2030s if you want to go that far out. But in terms of look at the next 5 to 7 years, let's say, I think the Lakers are currently in a better position. It also, I mean, this partly comes down to how you feel about Austin Reeves and Walker Kessler. I am on the bullish side with both of those guys. I don't know if Austin can be a true number 2 on a championship level team, but I think he can be a number 3. Kessler, I am high on as the Lakers' A-list center of the future, and a great fit with Luka and Austin. So I would look at the rest of the pieces currently, where in Dallas, there's a ton of pieces I like around Cooper Flagg, but I don't know if they're going to be on the next great Mavericks team. So Kyrie Irving coming off of extended absence and a major surgery, just like how long is he going to be in Dallas, and will he factor into the future, and what level is he going to be at coming back from his injury? Then I like guys like PJ Washington or Daniel Gafford, but it seems like Dallas is trying to potentially trade them, and they might not be on the next highly competitive Mavericks team. And then I like some of the younger guys, Max Christie, Morris Johnson, who they just drafted out of Michigan. There are some pieces there that I really like in Dallas. I don't know if they have that number 2 running mate right now, or number 3 running mate with Cooper Flagg. And until they find that guy, and maybe that's cobbling pieces together for a trade, or maybe that's signing someone or whatever, until they have that, I think the Lakers are in a better position to compete and be competitive for the next half decade. Whereas Dallas, it's still TBD. I think this is a multi-year project for them. And so again, if we're talking like mid to late 2030s, which team is going to be in a better position? I would lean Dallas, just because at that point, 8 years from now, 10 years from now, Luka's going to be in his mid to late 30s. So sure, I would probably take Cooper Flagg over him at that stage of their respective careers. But you know, for in the shorter term, 3 years, 5 years, even upwards of 7 years, I think the Lakers are better positioned to be a more competitive perennial championship contender. Now, again, it comes down to how you feel about Austin Reeves and Walker Kessler, but I am high on those guys. And I think the Lakers at least have those pieces in place where even with Austin or Kessler, you could potentially trade them in the future to go get that final piece or a better fitting piece, a different piece to fit around Luka. Whereas Dallas, I still think, is trying to acquire those pieces and trying to move things around. And there still needs to be a clearing of the roster, I think, to a degree, to really get to the next era, the next phase with Cooper Flagg. So that would be my perspective on the respective futures. Now, if Dallas lands the number 1 pick or the number 3 pick or something, we could be having a different conversation a year from now, 2 years from now with their future. But
as things stand right now with the available information, the current rosters, and the current options that both sides have, I am more bullish on the Lakers long term than I am the Mavericks. But that's not to say I don't like Dallas. I love Cooper Flagg. I think he's going to be a monster, and I think he's going to be in that top five MVP discussion. There's still a lot more that they need to acquire, a lot more that they need to do, in my opinion, where the Lakers are further along on that timeline and on that trajectory. But that'll do it for today's mailbag. Remember, there will be a part two. If I didn't answer your question, does not mean I'm not going to answer it. Maybe I'll even do a three-part mailbag. We'll see how I'm feeling. But shout out to the late night gang. Shout out to the chat. Appreciate you all. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a five-star review.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.